Right, hello, I'm Helen Lambert, this is Dylan De La Haye, and together we fight crime. No, co-founders of Police State UK, which is a news and opinion website. It's built on open source software, it has an open door policy for contributors, and it tracks politics, policing and civil liberties in the UK.
Way back in 2006, Privacy International published a map of the world showing which governments were best and worst for respecting or violating the privacy of their citizens. And the map had five countries marked in black, and they were Russia and China, unsurprisingly, Malaysia and Singapore, and the United Kingdom, which is kind of embarrassing. I thought it was a pretty good indicator of how bad things were starting to get in the UK, and I wanted to make sure as many people as possible heard about why I saw it being quite a big problem, so I immediately rushed out and bought a domain name. Hello, my name is Denny, and I'm a geek. My first solution to any problem is to buy an appropriate domain name. So I bought Police State UK, policestate.co.uk, and I put a copy of that map up on it while I tried to figure out what should be on there to attract people to come and look at the site and to inform people about why I saw a bit of the problem, which in the end took me a couple of years to figure out and the help of a co-editor.
Yeah, it took until the start of April in 2009, which, as you may remember, was when the G20 conference took place in London, along with a lot of big anti-capitalist and environmentalist protests, which we were mostly in sympathy with. This was just down the road from Dennis Flat. So, throughout the day, we were getting text updates from our friends who were there and hearing about the very heavy-handed policing that they were experiencing. We also heard about the very violent clearance of the entirely peaceful Bishopsgate climate camp on the evening of the 1st. And the other story that was coming in was one man who later was identified as Ian Tomlinson, hadn't even been involved in the protest, but died after an altercation with police.
So that was all pretty crazy. In the wake of that, we decided it was time to actually put the effort in and relaunch Police State UK with, you know, some actual content on it. So fortunately, I had kicking around a content management system which I'd written in the late 90s. It's an open source thing, you can download it still. If you just Google for your CMS, you'll find the guys maintaining it now, so I handed it over. And that's designed for running a kind of multi-author, moderated news site. I put that on the server, Helen did his front-end design, and we were live before the end of April 2009, so we got that all up pretty quick once we got started there.
Yeah, so to kick things off, we and our friends wrote a few articles, and because we're still very interested in this G20 story, we ended up going to a few of the public meetings of the MPA, that's the Metropolitan Police Authority.
I'm not very excited.
But their meetings are public, which I didn't know. It's quite interesting, you should go actually if you're interested in policing. We found it very enlightening, we learned all sorts of things about policing, public order policing, and about the limitations of police authorities. They are the bodies that are meant to oversee police forces, but it turns out they actually don't have that many teeth in practice. So later that year, I started a Twitter account for Police State UK, which we've maintained jointly ever since. It's been really great in the sense of having two of us on board, because it means one of us can pick up the baton, as it were, when the other one's busy, which happens quite a lot. And that's been ticking over quite nicely. I think we've just hit over 5,000 followers, which is not bad. And we're still gaining followers quite steadily, which was actually a bit of a surprise, because in the election last year, when New Labour were voted out, there was lots of talk about their programme, the coalition's programme of civil liberties, and their Great Freedom Bill, and a lot of people were quite optimistic that there wouldn't really be much of a need for civil liberties campaigns anymore.
In fact, Henry Porter, who's a particularly well-known civil liberties writer, he wrote an article in The Guardian saying that with the new government promising to respect our civil liberties, I think now is a good time for me to bow out, which is one of those sentences a journalist would probably come to regret. As it turns out, with the ongoing backlash against the Tories' economic policies kicking in, they seem to have decided that actually New Labour's anti-protest legislation might be handy and they'd like to keep it around for a while. In fact, if you look at the next chart, this is our Twitter followers again, but how many we got each individual day, and you can see a big spike of it attracts your attention straight away. That's the tuition fee protests at the end of last year. Suddenly a lot of people interested in how the police deal with protests then. And towards the end you can see another spike, that was the royal wedding, which we'll mention briefly further on.
Yeah, we do also have a Facebook account, although that's proved a lot less popular. It turns out that people who are interested in civil liberties do tend to prefer Twitter. Can't imagine why that might be, Facebook, and your reputation for privacy when it comes to users' data.
There's probably a couple of reasons why the Twitter account's doing best out of the Twitter, the Facebook, and the website. One of the main ones is just it's really quick and easy to update Twitter, and we're both quite busy, so that's the place where we probably put a lot of resources and our time into. Twitter lends itself well to a kind of collation and curation role. So what we end up doing there is we're bringing together existing content from various blogs we read, mainstream news articles, and stuff from a variety of other Twitter accounts that we follow, which are kind of overlapping or intersecting interests, and we filter all of that through our interests and then push it out again. And that ties in quite well with the original goal I had of raising awareness when I put that original map up back in 2006.
Yeah, that awareness-raising goal was also very much in our minds when we launched in 2009. It was only very recently the Convention on Modern Liberty had taken place. This quote is from a Times article by Philip Pullman, who's a keynote speaker at the event, and it groups together all of New Labour's legislation in one big long list, which suddenly makes it look very impressive and worrying. That principle is basically what we had in mind when we started the site. The thing with civil liberties issues is that when you look at any individual piece of legislation or incident or issue, it can seem quite trivial. But when you put it all together and look at it in context, a big picture emerges, which really is a lot more sinister and definitely worthy of attention. So we wanted to create a platform which facilitated discussion and information sharing on all of these disparate but related issues: privacy, surveillance, police and government databases, political policing, the right to protest, freedom of expression, freedom of speech and censorship, freedom of information, government transparency, open data, and the legislative process itself.
The legislative process, looking at how legislation gets proposed and passed, led me into looking at Parliament and how our representative democracy works for us and how it doesn't work for us. And once you start noticing how it doesn't work, you kind of get an interest in political reform because you see something's broken and you just kind of mess around and see if you can fix it a bit. Which unfortunately led to me running for Parliament last year in the general election as an independent candidate on a platform of direct digital democracy, the idea which you'd be able to vote on issues instead of politicians. Politicians aren't that interesting, really. That carries on now under the brand name of DemoX, which is a Swedish direct democracy party. You can read more about that online.
But during the election campaign last year, we saw a prime example of the sort of abuse of the legislative process that we're talking about, the Digital Economy Bill. Now, sadly, the Digital Economy Act, no thanks to all of the MPs who didn't show up to vote, that was passed, rushed through in Russia, which is supposed to be used to pass non-controversial legislation, but which both parties last year used as a way of pushing through various things they wanted to do and avoiding the normal parliamentary process. So this sort of part of political game playing to bypass proper parliamentary scrutiny is exactly how a lot of this sort of legislation, which can be used to infringe upon our civil liberties, gets passed in the first place. So we think that these issues, civil liberties issues, are relevant to anyone who's ever written to their MP and been ignored, anyone who's affected by the current public sector funding cuts, anyone who's ever been stopped by police for any reason. They will be keeping your details on file for 7 years at least, regardless of whether or not you were charged with anything. The very first article I wrote for the site was called Connecting the Dots, and it tried to explain how all of these very different issues on the surface are interrelated and they all interact. And when you look at them all in context, to put them all together, the big picture that emerges really is quite a big deal.
So originally, we didn't campaign on civil liberties. We were both single issue campaigners on things that actually directly affected or were interested us. Helen's been involved in equalities and environmental activism for years. The first thing I ever politically campaigned on was motorcycle legislation over 15 years ago. But if you start trying to do that kind of thing, you quickly realise that for any political campaign to be effective, for a start, you need a basic background of working civil liberties, and also you need a government which is willing to listen and at least possibly willing to be responsive to what you're saying to them. And instead of that, what we've got is restrictions on protest in the area of Parliament. I mean, you have to get permission, but we need to have a protest near there. We've got kettling, which is like this new sport our police have invented recently. It's great. Aggressively overt surveillance of protesters. So these guys, the forward intelligence teams, policemen with giant cameras, they take a photo of every single person who turns up to a political protest. Not just the dodgy ones, the peaceful protesters, they all get recorded. That goes back into national police intelligence databases. And then people get on these databases, turn up too often, they get categorised as a domestic extremist, excuse me, which basically is the term that the police invented so that they could use anti-terrorism legislation against protesters in the UK. At the most extreme, what we saw recently, that spike near the royal wedding, was people being preemptively arrested for things they hadn't done, in some cases they weren't even talking about doing, because really random crimes like suspicion of conspiracy to cause a public nuisance, which is every bit as tenuous as it sounds, but it's good enough to get someone in jail for 24 hours so they can't protest while whatever special event is going on.
But it has not all been doom and gloom. There have been some fun bits over the last couple of years. The most entertaining bit for me has been finding out quite how easy it is to get invited to certain parliamentary seminars. When we got the email inviting us to one of these legal forum things, we looked at the ticket price, it was £200-300 for commercial delegates, well, it's on that. So we wrote to them and tried to flag a free ticket as a third sex delegate, which we actually got. So the whole parliamentary system can seem really inaccessible and ivory tower, but it turns out, now you know, all you need to do to get invited is start a troublemaking politics website, write some articles criticising government policy and police conduct, and you might just get an email inviting you to make a nuisance of yourself at their next meeting. They won't listen to you, but you can go and blog about it, which I think says one good thing about our country at least. Yeah, it is quite weird that when you go to these things, how disconnected the attitudes that you're hearing there are from the street point of view sometimes. I went to one which was on the future of policing and social media, and which mostly seemed to consist of police top brass patting themselves on the back for how modern they were and down with this internet thing and good at talking to people and listening to their views, which contrasted sharply with my views, experience as an activist, ever trying to successfully communicate or negotiate with police, particularly online. The Met is still very poor when it comes to social media. Their Twitter account, you can see here, CO11 Met Police. They have an explicit thing on their website saying they will not reply to Twitter conversations. They won't engage at all, so they pretty much failed the first hurdle there. But some of the other forces nationally have stepped up to the challenge. West Midlands, particularly good. Lots of policemen using it in a very productive way. They've even got tweeting Sniffer Dog, who's worth looking up, actually. So check that out. And that's something we have seen improvement in since we started campaigning.
So we've managed to make some interesting connections between our social media presence and our website, because we do talk to the people and followers. We find that really useful. Back in January, I was reading about a protest in Parliament law I spoke about earlier. That's probably going to be repealed, which means an older law comes back into effect in that area. So I started reading the older law, and I thought, serious, that's kind of a vague word. So I put out on Twitter, would any lawyers reading like to define the word serious in section 14(1)(a) of the Public Order Act 1986? And we got a reply really quickly from a guy on Twitter called Judge Dewey, who's not a judge, but he is a senior lawyer at a large criminal defence practice. And within 24 hours, he submitted an article to our website, which was an in-depth answer to the question. It was great. And so we published that that same day. The answer, by the way, is no, there is no real legal definition of serious, so you're at the mercy of the judge and who's got the best lawyer on the day, which is a bit worrying. Another nice join-the-dots exercise for us happened all on our website, and that was around the Day X 3 protest last December, which was the third of the tuition fee protests. I was at that particular protest, and afterwards I wrote an article for our site called Lies, Damned Lies, and Crowd Control, which was about the police lying to protesters in Parliament Square about the availability of routes for leaving the kettle that they'd put in place. And this takes us back again to the Met Police's Twitter presence. And on Twitter all day, they were saying there's a kettle in Parliament Square, but there are routes to exit, it's here and here and here. They were lies. I was there, I couldn't get out.
I spent that day reading the hashtag manning the Twitter station and generally getting a wider view of eyewitness accounts from the ground, from which there emerged another quite surprising story. The Met Police published a press release the following day, making the claim that the protest had deviated from the agreed route. This was then picked up by mainstream media, including the BBC. It was printed on Newsnight. It was used to justify everything that then kicked off and all the violence that ensued. What I discovered from Denny's experiences and other real-life sort of social media updates was that actually, as much as there was an agreed route, which was negligible, it was coming out of Parliament Square through the exit, which had been blocked by lines of police by 2 p.m. by the time the protest entered the square. So that was all very exciting. And the best thing about both of these articles that we wrote was that the next article submitted to the website on police.uk was by a London Assembly member and Metropolitan Police Authority member, Jenny Jones of the Green Party. And she wrote an open letter to the Met on the policing of the tuition fee protest, which was cross-posted on various websites. And in which she picked up on and referenced both of the points that we've made in our previous two articles. So it was kind of cool to see a politician not only reading the site, but also taking what we're saying on board and giving it some signal up. Felt quite represented there. She's still the only politician to have written an article for us, but I'm hoping she won't be the last.
So, in general, it's been interesting over the last couple of years to see how much more common and also particularly how much more respected citizen journalism seems to have become. I think that's largely to do with the Ian Thompson case again, because it was some footage from an American guy with his camera phone, which proved that all the early police statements around that were basically lies. further down than that, but it's an exciting movement to be part of, and we're hoping we're going to continue to build on the success we've had so far. And the challenge for us is trying to reach out to a wider audience, because it's very easy, particularly on Twitter, to speak to people who are already in your bubble and are quite interested in listening to what you've got to say. And the challenge is to reach out to people who haven't really thought about these issues yet and get them to start thinking, so that's what we're trying to do. If anyone who's here is interested in any of these issues or issues that touch on them, we'd love to have more articles from external contributors. You can see a range of ways to get in touch with us there. There's the website, Twitter and Facebook, and our email addresses. Let us know. Thanks very much.